I'm excited to start a new series with you today, and that series is simply entitled Truth, and truth with a question mark, because probably in our lives we've gone looking for truth, and maybe times we thought we found it, and maybe found out that it wasn't what we thought it was, and other times we have found something that we can stand firmly upon, some truth that we can hold on to that sustains us. Truth is really, really important. And we're going to be unpacking a number of things about this topic over the next weeks, and I hope that you'll dive in with us because it certainly is an important question. Truth, where do we find it? Does it even exist? How is it? Why is it important to us? Those are some of the things that we'll be discussing as we go through this series. But I'd like to begin with some questions with you, if I could. Now, these are big questions. You know, they're capital B-I-G questions, and I have three of them. And I think, really, if you could whittle down to three questions that have to be answered in our lives, I think these three have to rise up to the top or near the top. So just ponder them as I ask them to kind of begin our time together this morning. The first question is this: where did we come from? Where did we come from? Now, I don't mean it just in the physical sense. I mean, ultimately, where did we come from? Where did everything come from? It's an important question for us to ask. And the answer to that question will often determine different pathways that we will go down. There's a lot of implications to that question. There's other questions that come underneath it. Questions like, is there something or someone bigger than us out there? Did we come from someone or something? Or did we just kind of come from ourselves by a chance and random process? If there is someone bigger or something bigger, are we accountable to that entity or that person? Is there accountability that's built in? If there's a source to us, is there an accountability to that? Does all human life have intrinsic value? Is another question that flows out of this idea of where do we come from? Because where do we come from? Our answer to that will help to answer that question as well, and one that we're wrestling with in our culture right now, whether it be because of people's ethnicity, whether it be because in the sake of the unborn, there's a lot of questions that rise about, do we all have intrinsic value? Not value simply for what we do, but it's value simply for who we are. The second major question that we need to grapple with is, what is the purpose of our existence? What is the purpose of our existence? Simply put, why am I here? Where did I come from is a good place to start, then the next logical question would be, well, why am I here? What's the purpose of me being here? Because there is a sense in which if there is a purpose, then we want to align ourselves with that purpose, and we may find fulfillment in doing that. We'll find fulfilling our purpose leads to a sense of well-being in our lives. But what is that purpose? How do we find it? Where do we go? And is it about ourselves or someone else? Is this purpose that we have, is it about me? Just about me? Or is it about me for others? And I think that's a really important corollary to that question. What is the purpose of our existence? And then the third question is this: what happens after we die? What happens after we die? It's a really important question to ask. Is that the end of our existence, or is there something after? And if there is something after, what is it? And if it's good, how do we attain it? If it's not, how do we avoid it? And those are some important corollaries, again, to that question, what happens after we die? These questions have to do with where we came from, our past, so to speak. What is our purpose right now in the present? And what's going to happen in the future? Three really important questions. And I just want to challenge you this week. You know, ask somebody those questions. Hey, I got three questions. How do you answer them? And you're not there to judge their answers or anything, but start with yourself. How would you answer those questions? And then use it as a point of conversation, maybe around your dinner table or with some people that you gather with on a regular basis, and just let those answers begin to come up. There's a lot of different answers that can be posed to those questions. But the answers to these questions, I think we could agree on this, they matter. The answers to these questions matter, because they have profound implications for our lives. How you answer each of those questions is going to in some way determine how you choose to live, the decisions that you make. And so you want to make sure that the answers that we find, if there are even answers, and I believe that there are, that we find ones that are reliable, that they're dependable, that they can be counted on, that they're true. This idea of being dependable raises in my mind the idea of when you're walking, and I remember distinctly being at a winter camp in the youth group here years ago, and at the winter camp that we were at, it had a big lake, and the lake was frozen over, and we had been told not to go out on the lake because they weren't confident that the thickness of the ice was enough, but a couple of us decided during a break we would go down and just kind of try it out. Not smart, don't recommend it. But we ended up beginning to go out onto the ice. Now, we were going very slowly. We knew that it wasn't probably a good idea. We just wanted to see what that would be like. We kind of had the chain built to make sure if somebody went through, we could rescue them. Again, bad idea, but that's what we did. And I'll never forget, as we were starting to get out there, and I was one of the ones who was further out, all of a sudden, as I put my foot down, I just heard this huge crack. All of us just took off and went back to the shore. We weren't out that far, and we did not try to go back out there again. Why? Because we weren't sure where we would put our foot, that it would hold our weight, that it would hold up. We didn't know if the ice was dependable, and we recognized that if it wasn't and we fell through, that there could be some significant consequences to that, the minimum of which would be we would be very cold and very wet. So in life, it's similar, right? We walk through life and we want to make sure that where we put our weight is something that will hold us up. It's not something that will crack or not something that will break underneath us, that we fall through to whatever it is underneath. We want to make sure that we walk on a firm pathway so that wherever it is that we're going, we end up getting there in our destination. And that's really the role that truth can play in our lives. Truth is like that sturdy place that we can put our foot down and it'll hold us up and we can walk in confidence knowing that these things are true, they're reliable and they're dependable. Now, if there are such answers, where do we find them? Do we create our own answers or discover them somewhere else? So I want to set up our series with an event recorded in the Bible. And if you have a way to look at Scripture, I really want to encourage you to look at John chapter 18. Look at John chapter 18. We're going to pick it up in verse 33. And as you're looking there, beginning to find that, the scene we're going to look at is a scene where the Jewish religious leaders have brought Jesus to the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. And they've requested permission to have Jesus crucified. In that culture, in that government system, the Jewish leaders did not have the authority to execute someone. They needed Roman approval to be able to do that. And so they brought Jesus to Pilate, and they want Pilate to give permission, his stamp of approval, for Jesus to be executed. Now, their religious accusation against Jesus is blasphemy, that he, a mere man, is claiming to be God. Obviously, that's an important truth claim, right, if it's accurate. But they didn't believe it, and so that was their kind of problem with Jesus. But they knew that Pilate wouldn't really care about that. One more person claiming to be a deity doesn't matter to a Roman governor. And so when they come to Pilate, they come and they accuse him of leading a rebellion against Rome, of setting himself up as some kind of king of a kingdom that will end up rebelling against Rome. Now, that's something that would certainly get Pilate's attention. And so we pick up the story, but before we read John's record of the event, let me ask you a question. How would you finish this statement? It's a statement made by Jesus. And we're going to see it in just a minute, so don't look ahead. But just in your mind, think about how would you answer this statement. Maybe write it in the comments if you'd like to do that. And here's the quote. The reason I was born and came into the world is to. The reason I was born and came into the world is to. Jesus is basically making a purpose statement. This is the purpose of my coming. This is why I have come into the world. This is why I came to you. That's a pretty important statement, and the answer is going to be very important as well. Now, we might come up with answers like, well, Jesus came into the world, the purpose was to save us, to rescue us, and that would absolutely be true. Jesus himself said he came to seek and save that which were lost. So that's a part of what Jesus came for. We might say something like he came to heal the sick and to set the captive free, to let the blind see, and some of the prophecies that were written that Jesus read in the scroll of Isaiah early on in his ministry, and that would indeed be true as well. Or maybe it's to reveal the Father, to show us what God is like, and certainly that also would be true. And we'll see in a minute how Jesus answered that or finished that statement. But in verse 33, as we jump into the story, it says, Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, are you the king of the Jews? These people are saying you claim to be a king. Are you? Is that your claim? Is that what you're saying you are? And in verse 34, Jesus responds, is that your own idea? Jesus asked. Or did others talk to you about me? In other words, have you seen any evidence of me claiming to be a king, rising up a rebellion? Have you seen any evidence of that? Sure, Jesus had crowds that followed him. Sure, Jesus taught. He did miracles. But there'd never been a call to pick up weapons. There'd never been a call to overthrow Roman government, even though that's what the Jewish people really wanted. Jesus had never gone down that road. Verse 35, Pilate replied, "Am I a Jew? Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done? I don't care about your people. The Romans didn't really like the Jewish people. The Jewish people really didn't like the Romans. This is something I could care less about. I'm just here to deal with this political issue. And it's your people that have handed you over to me," he says. So Jesus says in verse 36, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." So there is a sense in which, yeah, there's a kingdom, and it is my kingdom, so that would make him a king, technically. But he's very clear that I'm not here to overthrow anybody on this earth. I'm here to set up a different kind of kingdom, a spiritual kingdom, a kingdom that's not of this world, and inviting people to be a part of that kingdom. That kingdom is no threat to you, Pilate. So Pilate responds in verse 37, "You are a king then," said Pilate. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. So you admit that you have some claim to kingship. And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact," here we go, "the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth." To testify to the truth. "Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Now that is a powerful statement. That's a powerful statement. Jesus saying, "I came from where I came from. I came from heaven to this earth. And one of the key components of me coming, one of the key purposes, is that I could reveal the truth, that I could bear witness that this is true." And those who buy into that are on the side of truth. They're with me. And Jesus in this statement makes some interesting observations. First of all, there's an affirmation that there is truth. Jesus here is claiming that there is such a thing as truth, and he came to testify about it, which means that he knows it. So there is truth, Jesus knows it, and the affirmation that he shared it, he testified to the truth. There is truth, Jesus knows it, he shared it, and there will be those who receive and accept what he shares. There will be those who hear it, realize that it is truth, and respond appropriately and put themselves, align themselves with this king and his spiritual kingdom. They will recognize that truth. Now, the opposite is also true. There will be those who recognize what Jesus is saying but reject it, and they will be on the opposite side. So what Jesus is saying here is that just his claim to testify of the truth is going to set up two camps, those who believe it and those who don't. That's often the way it is, right? When any kind of truth claim is made, there are those who believe it and there are those who don't. So it's always important to us to go back and say, who's making the truth claim? Who's making this? If even in the news today, we hear all kinds of things that come at us, right? One of the things that is important to ask is, where is this coming from? Where is this information coming from? Is there an agenda? Is it accurate? Has it been verified? Those are all good questions for us to ask. Why? Because we want to know what the truth is. And sometimes the truth can seem hard to find. Here Jesus is saying, I came to testify of the truth. I know it. I'll share it. And then you'll have a choice. You either believe it or you don't. And that's what Jesus is affirming. But this scene ends with a question. It's a really important question. And in verse 38, the last verse of this section, Pilate asks, what is truth? What is truth? Now, we don't know how Pilate said this. You can say those words in a lot of different ways. You can say them kind of as a cynical critique, almost said angrily. I'm tired of the debates of the philosophers, the Greek philosophers, and what's carried on as this is true, that is true, and what is truth? Don't even bother me with that. I'm not so sure anything is true that's out there. Or maybe it's an indifferent reply. What is truth? What do I care about truth? I don't live in a world of truth. I live in a world of politics and manipulation and all those kinds of things and lies. I just need to sort through that. Maybe it was said dismissively. It doesn't matter to me right now. Or maybe it was said, and I'm not so sure this is the way he said it, but maybe it was said longingly, like, what is truth? I'd love to know it, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. indicated a desire to know more. Now, from the actions that Pilate's going to take, it certainly doesn't seem like Pilate's going to act on a longing to know what this truth is. He certainly interacts with Jesus a little bit, but in the end, he will turn him over to be crucified because his truth is he doesn't want the Roman emperor to come down on him because there's unrest in his area of the world that he oversees. That's his truth. But perhaps these options capture the response to claims about truth today. And if we use some words, and I'm not a philosopher, but there's some words I think that might help us to be able to put some pegs in to understand some different points of view, words that are commonly used today. And these might be reflected in the way that Pilate may have asked that question. First is the idea of relativism. Relativism simply says there is no absolute truth. Everything is relative. So when we talk about absolute truth, it simply doesn't exist. But when we come up against that claim, it's really an illogical claim. Because if there is no absolute truth, then how can we be sure of that statement, that there is no absolute truth? Isn't that in and of itself a claim to an absolute truth? And so right there, it breaks down. It just doesn't hold up logically. If you run into somebody and they make that kind of claim and you talk about truth or ask them, do you believe in truth? And they say, no, I think all truth is relative. There is no absolute truth. You can just simply say, how do you know that? Because if there is no absolute truth, you can't be confident in what you just said. But then there's skepticism. There might be absolute truth, but we can't know it. We can't know it. It might be out there, but we can't know it. But really, there's the same problem. If we can't know it, how do you know that you can't know it? That's knowing an absolute truth. Again, logically, it just doesn't hold up. We just made an absolute truth claim saying that we can't know an absolute truth claim. Tightly related to this idea of skepticism is agnosticism. Maybe you've run into somebody and said, I'm an agnostic. I don't think we can know. We just can't know. Maybe there is truth out there, but we can't know it confidently. And again, we would just say, well, how do you know that you can't know? Is it possible to know? And saying that we can't know is being certain of something. And then there's pluralism, this idea of all truths being equally valid. All truths are equally valid. This is kind of the concept of your truth and my truth. Just, you know, have your truth and hold on to it. This is appealing because of tolerance, and we're called to tolerate and to be tolerant of people, and we should be tolerant of people. It doesn't necessarily mean that we should be tolerant of every idea or every point of view. Because at the end of the day, this idea of all truths being equally valid is impossible. The law of non-contradiction says something cannot be both A and non-A at the same time. It's logically impossible. And it fails to appreciate that although all people may be equal, see, all people are, I would argue, valuable. All people are equal. Not all truth claims are. So just because someone makes a claim, and I view us all as equal in value, it doesn't mean those claims are all equal in appeal or equal in truth. So where do these views lead? If we adopt these views of truth, where do we end up? Well, if we go down the road of relativism, it fails to lead to a basis of morality. There is no basis for morality. If there is no absolute truth, then there's no basis for morality. There is nothing ultimately right or wrong about anything, right? Nothing ultimately right or wrong about anything. So what you say is right, who am I to argue that it isn't? If I say something's wrong, how can I make that statement? Somebody can very simply say that the opposite is right, and we get into these debates. But something tells us that things aren't right, right? Have you experienced that? Even if you didn't have your Bible, or maybe you didn't even believe in God, there's a time where you saw something or experienced something, and something inside you said, that's not right. It wasn't even a viewpoint that you had. You just had a reaction that just can't be right. Where does that come from? This idea of seeing suffering and starvation and child abuse, and we just know they're wrong, they're bad. We look at things like love and generosity and kindness and peace, and we just know that they're good, they're valuable. And it comes from our conscience. This thing that tells us that something is right or wrong is called our conscience. Where does our conscience come from? Interestingly, the scriptures address this. In Romans chapter 2, Paul writes, "Indeed, when Gentiles who do not have the law do by nature things required by the law, they are a law for themselves, even though they don't have the law." Now, stop there for a minute. That's a lot of law. I understand it can be a confusing sentence. So here's what Paul is saying. He's saying Gentiles, they're non-Jews. So the Jews were the ones who had the law, the Old Testament law. They had everything that God had given them as his chosen nation, and they were to be the representatives to the world of what it looked like to follow the one true God. Gentiles didn't have those advantages. They didn't have the law. They didn't have God's revealed commands. And what Paul is saying is that there are Gentiles who were following the law even though they didn't even have it. They were making decisions based upon what God had said was right even though they didn't know what God had said. Where is that coming from? Well, let's go on. They show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts, their consciences also bearing witness, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them and at other times defending them. And what Paul is arguing is saying that, yeah, this sense of what is right and what is wrong, even though they didn't have God's written law, it came from a conscience, something that God gave them that intrinsically tells us this is not right or this is right. And sometimes that conscience whispers to us, it accuses us, "Oh, that wasn't right, what you just did, we just don't have a peace, we know it wasn't right," even though we may not even know why it wasn't right. And sometimes it affirms us and defends us, saying, yeah, you did the right thing, that conscience that God has given us. Now, I got to be clear that conscience can be tainted. If we ignore that conscience long enough, the scriptures teach us that we can dull that conscience, and it doesn't have the same effect in our lives. But that conscience is something that God has given every human being. That's what helps us to determine. If we go down the road of skepticism, then really nothing can be trusted, including the statement that I just made, that nothing can be trusted, right? Because we just don't know. And it leads to this hopelessness and despair. Nothing can be counted on. It's the idea when we're in skepticism or agnosticism, it's the idea we just never know when we put our foot down, when the ice is going to crack and we're going to fall through. And we live life constantly on edge. Nothing is secure. Nothing is stable. And that just tears us apart on the inside. Mentally, we struggle. It can lead to some very dark places. Unfortunately, when we take truth out of the equation, that's often what can happen. If we go down that road of pluralism and the idea of tolerance, that everybody's idea is just as valid as everybody else's, or everybody's truth is just as valid as everyone else's, what happens when one person's truth contradicts another person's truth? Inevitably, that clash is going to happen. Which one do you choose, or is it just that the one who's stronger ends up winning out? You know, one example of this is the whole idea of abortion. There are very strong feelings on both sides of this equation, very strong feelings that abortion is something that women have the right to choose, and there's a right to that. And there's very strong feelings that, no, that's a life, an innocent life that should be valued, and there's something important about that life. When those two ideals clash, is it just that the stronger one, the one who has more support in our political system, wins? Or is there something greater to base that decision upon? Could there be an answer to where we came from, going back to those first three questions, that tells us, that gives light on this question of, is all life valuable? Both born and unborn, so that baby that hasn't yet entered into this world is valuable, and the mother struggling with all the implications of being pregnant, perhaps when she didn't plan to be pregnant, and the impact on her life, she's valuable as well. Both of them are valuable, but it doesn't necessarily mean that both claims or actions are equally valid. So, what if truth does exist? Can we know it? Yeah, let's say that it does exist. It is out there. Can we know it? Where do we find it? Something that can be depended on, something that doesn't change. Where would we find that truth? Well, next week we're going to talk about that. That's going to be our topic as we head into our next message on this issue of truth. But let me just head back to Jesus and Pilate and wrap up that story for us. Just hours before his arrest, Jesus made this profound statement to his friends. He was gathered with them and he said this. He said, "I am the way and the truth and the life." Now they were having a discussion about him leaving and he was going to go to prepare a place, and then he said he would come back and take us to be with him, and the disciples didn't really understand what he was talking about. So the idea of being the way makes sense. That was what he was talking about in that regard. The idea of being the life, he had promised many times to give life to people who would believe in him. He had claimed to be the resurrection and the life when he raised Lazarus from the dead. He had claimed earlier that people who would follow him would never die but would live eternally. Even though they may die, they will die physically unless Jesus comes back to take them. And we understand those things. But right in the middle, he says, the truth, the truth. Because the bottom line is, any kind of claim can be made. Anybody can claim to be the way to God. Anybody can claim to be the one that can give you life after this life. But those claims don't matter at all if they're not true. And so Jesus makes a bolder claim. He says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." And as soon as someone claims to be the truth, he didn't claim to know the truth, he claimed to be the truth. That is a bold claim, and one worthy of being tested. If anyone claimed to be the truth, we should test that claim. Well, what are the qualifications for you to say that? What's the evidence? And yet Jesus, time and time again, as he orchestrated and walked through events all the way through to his death and resurrection, which he had promised would happen. After all, think about this. If someone told you ahead of time that they were going to die and come back from the dead 3 days later, and then they pulled it off, isn't that a pretty strong statement about them being the truth? And that's exactly what Jesus was claiming. So there's so much in that statement. But the idea of Jesus being the truth is such a powerful idea. And could it be that on that day, when the Jewish leaders, religious leaders, brought Jesus to Pilate to seek his condemnation, and Pilate questioned Jesus, and he asked that famous question, "What is truth?" Could it be that in that moment he was staring truth in the face, and he just didn't realize it? He didn't recognize truth when he saw it. You know, for some of us, that's the situation we're in. It could be that truth has been right in front of us, and we just haven't seen it for what it is. And there could be all kinds of reasons for that. For Pilate, he was caught up in trying to protect himself, protect his position, seek balance between an unruly people and his role as the governor of that area representing Rome. There were all kinds of things going on in Pilate's life. He couldn't be bothered with this issue. And yet Jesus, as he so often did with others, did it with Pilate and brought him face to face and saying, "I'm here to testify to the truth. And if you're on the side of truth, you're going to listen to me." There was an offer in that statement. Which side are you on, Pilate? Which side are you on? There's only two choices when it comes to Jesus. You're either for him, you're with him, or you're not. And if Jesus truly is the truth, then I want to make sure that I'm with him. Because in being with him, I find solid ground to stand on. I find answers to those three powerful questions that we talked about in the beginning of this message. I'm provided an answer of where I came from, an answer that provides value to my life. I'm provided an answer as to what my purpose is here on earth, an answer that is not just about me, but it's about blessing others, in which I'll find greater fulfillment, personally even, than if I just seek to live for myself. I can live for something greater that goes beyond this world. I can have an answer to the question of what happens after we die. And I can have an answer that gives me a firm footing to know what will happen to me after I die. And there's a choice that I make in this life regarding the truth. Do I believe that he is the way, the truth, and the life? Have I placed my faith in him? That will determine my eternal destiny. Jesus answers all three of these questions clearly and logically because he is the truth. According to history, the historian Eusebius records that Pontius Pilate ultimately took his own life sometime during the reign of Emperor Caligula of Rome. He had fallen out of favor His life had fallen apart, and he came to the end where his choice, his action, was to take himself out of this world. A desperate act of one who had come to the end of himself. And I just have to wonder, if Pilate would have chosen in that moment to side with the one who was the truth, might the outcome and the pathway of his life been radically different? Now, I'm not here to say that people who are followers of Jesus can't get to the point of taking their own lives. I know that it happens. But I also know that it doesn't change the answers to the three questions. And that for them, if they're a follower of Jesus, they still will go to be with Jesus for eternity. I'm so thankful for that. But I got to believe that in Pilate's case, his life trajectory would have been very different had he chosen to side with the truth. Because that is the ultimate question. Whose side are you on? Are you on the side of truth? And if you are, then you're on the side of Jesus, because Jesus made a claim to be the truth and backed it up with what he did. And that is the foundation that we can stand on, that is firm and real and provides things like hope and peace and confidence in a world that is shaky and unstable and very, very volatile. I'm so thankful for that. And so this morning, can I just challenge you, when it comes to Jesus, have you made a profession of faith that he is the way, the truth, and the life? Have you acknowledged him as your Savior? As we move through this series, we'll continue to emphasize these ideas of truth from different angles, but it's always going to come back to Jesus. And ultimately, we all need to make that decision. And perhaps for you, right here, right now, is your time. And you can simply acknowledge, Jesus, I need you, because I am inadequate in and of myself to meet God's standard of perfection. And all of us are, by the way. And so I receive what you did for me through your death and resurrection on that cross and from that tomb, when you came out of that tomb and it was empty, as proof that you are the one and only individual who can rescue me from my condition. And so I place my faith and my trust in you. And as you enter into that relationship, all those promises that Jesus made become true about you. His presence fills your life. He changes your eternal destiny. He gives you hope. It doesn't mean every circumstance that you face in this life will change. You're still going to go through some really hard things. But you'll go through them with him, with the truth by your side, to guide you in your decision making, to guide you in your steps. And as someone who's had the honor and privilege of doing that for a number of years, I can just say it's so worth it. It definitely matters. It is the most important decision we would make. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this opportunity to delve into this topic. Truth is so important. It matters. It matters to you. And you did not want us wandering around, not sure where to put our feet, unsure if the ice is going to crack every time we take a step. Thank you that you provided what is needed for us to have stability in our lives. It doesn't mean we won't go through hard things. But Father, you will be there with us because of what your Son Jesus accomplished. Thank you, Jesus, for being the way, the truth, and the life. And I pray that more and more individuals will choose to side with the truth. And that will happen in some way, small way perhaps, because we who have come to recognize the truth by your grace and by your mercy are sharing that with others through what we do and what we say. So that others too may find that stability that we experience in a world that is constantly changing. May we as your church, Father, live this out for your honor and for your glory. Amen. Amen. I'm looking forward to continuing the series in the weeks ahead. I hope you'll be back and join us. Remember, next Sunday, we are going to be here online at 9 o'clock, just as we have been, so I encourage you to tune in. Or, for those of you who are able and would like to join us outside at 11 o'clock here on campus, make sure you register on the hub. We'd love to see you then. It'd be great to see some faces and begin to gather weekly on Sunday. So all that information for you is on the hub. Again, our online community, Digital Neighborhood, starts next week as well. So it's an opportunity for you to jump in, get to know some people. I would encourage you to find that link on the hub and get involved in that. And then just two last things. This week, actually in the weeks that correspond to this series, on Monday nights at 7 o'clock, I'm going to hop online. There'll be a Zoom link on the hub that you can use to enter into a discussion group. We've been having Pastor Bobby and Pastor Matt have been doing devotionals on Mondays. We're going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going to be leading a discussion group based on this series. So if you just like to ask some more questions or go a little deeper or just have a time to interact, I'd love to do that with you. And so we'll be starting that tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. So you can get the link on the hub for that. And then regarding prayer, we love to be able to pray with you and for you as leadership here at Davisville. And so this past Tuesday, two of our elders were online from 7 to 8 p.m. And again, there was a link there on the hub for you to jump in and just be able to pray, us to be able to pray with you. It's great to be able to do that. We look forward to doing that again this coming Tuesday and the Tuesdays to come. So that's 7 to 8 Tuesday evenings. You can jump in and we'd love the opportunity to pray with you in that way. All that information is on the hub, so check that out. I hope you have a great, great day. Enjoy yourself today in this beautiful weather that we're having. And we hope to see you again one way online or in person next Sunday.